Hey everybody, I'm Eric, and today I watched WWE 2017 Week 16, which ran from April 17th through April 19th, and included Raw Episode 1247, SmackDown 922, 205 Live 21, NXT 388, Main Event 238, and as I've covered the last 2 weeks, the third episode available of Mid-South Wrestling from December 25th, 1981. Mid-South Wrestling. I just said that twice. But anyway, we'll start there after I go through the rankings for this week. You know, SmackDown wasn't very memorable for me overall. It had some great segments in it. But the rest of the week had so much great stuff too, that SmackDown was pretty low down on my list this week. But Talking Smack was still up there. Number one, 205 Live. Excellent, excellent matches this week. Number two is Talking Smack. Number three, Raw, because we had a couple of amazing segments on Raw. Well, mainly one amazing set. No, there were a few involving that same person. But anyway, number four is NXT. I'll talk about why later on. Actually, in the next part of my list here. Number five was SmackDown, and number six was Main Event. There is like one really cool moment in Main Event, but otherwise, not super worth checking out this week. Unless you're watching it instead of Raw. I posted this on Twitter that Main Event, if you just want some really, really solid matches, check out the two original matches on Main Event each week. If you don't watch Raw, but you want to get caught up on what happens, then just watching Main Event is a pretty good way to go about it, because they usually show replay like the best parts of Raw, which is cool if you haven't actually watched Raw but you want to get a taste of what's going on over there, and you get a little bit of extra commentary on that, not during the things but as kind of the introductions and outros for each of those segments. You get Corey and Tom talking about it together, which you don't get on the actual show. So that's exciting for me. Anyway, my three favorite matches, and actually this week there's a tie for third place. Oh, that is another coincidence. I keep having Ty Dillinger's matches tie for their placement. So because of tiebreaker, it is actually number three for Ty versus Eric Young. And in their cage match on NXT, Ty Dillinger's farewell to NXT. I'll talk about that more a little bit later. The tie broken, the other match would be AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin. That was pretty solid. Number two was Braun Strowman versus The Big Show. And my favorite match of this week was Austin Aries versus Teddy Joystick Perkins on 205 Live. My favorite non-wrestling segments, or rather non-match segments, no referee involved. Number three was Chris Jericho's interview, which gets interrupted by a Daffy Dottering. No, what's the Elias Samson drifts by and he gets added to the list. That's basically what all that happens that I liked about that segment. So I don't know. I'll still talk about it later. I wrote down his alliteration phrases describing the drifter. Number two was the Noam Dar, Alicia Fox, Rich Swann, the kind of conclusion to that whole storyline on 205 Live. And my number one favorite segment was Braun just rampaging backstage. There's a few, at least two. I think we had the opening segment of the whole show, and then two backstage segments, and then the match as the main event, which is fantastic. Braun just taking his anger out on the entire locker room. Luckily, it gets stopped before everybody gets totally beat up. All right, so let's talk. First, let's talk about the Mid-South Wrestling from December 25th, 1981. Christmas. There are no references to Christmas in this entire episode. I was pretty disappointed. Or if there were, I totally missed it. I should note that I at least this week, and I think the last 2 weeks, I've taken more notes about Mid-South Wrestling than any other individual show, and it's shorter than any of the other shows aside from Talking Smack. But anyway, I'm getting pretty into it. I'm getting invested in some of these feuds, especially Paul Ellering versus the Iron Sheik. So we'll see where that goes. But this episode is commentated by Boyd Pierce and guest commentator Cowboy Bill Watts. You know, some of these quotes that I wrote down, I didn't write down any. I figured I would remember, but I don't remember exactly what he was talking about. I think he was talking about Paul Ellering and the Iron Sheik. But Bill Watson says, "Things are getting hot and heavy," to describe how things are developing. And yeah, I like that because it reminded me of that Seinfeld episode. I don't know if that was the name of the episode, but Elaine is going out with a saxophonist, and he dedicates a song. He writes and dedicates a song to her, and he calls it "Hot and Heavy," because word gets around that their relationship is getting hot and heavy, and she's upset about that at first, but then she's flattered that he has embraced it and done a song about it. But then then he is awful at the saxophone because they do engage in sexual activities. I think that was that happens. I remember the episode ended with very, very bad saxophone sounds. Anyway, our first match of the episode, Mike George, the shop teacher from last week, changes his focus to join a tag team with Carlos Zepeda to defeat Jerry Novak and Rick Ferreira. I didn't write down any details of that match, but they were the crowd favorites, or at least Mike George was. So it was a nice win for them. We had the follow-up of the 50 reps executed by Paul Ellering. The Iron Sheik responds to this with the Persian clubs with General Standor Akbar at his side. He does 103 reps. He is able to answer the challenge and execute with precision. He didn't do exactly. He could have just stopped right at 100. He did a couple more just to be safe, I guess. But Paul... Precious Paul Ellering, he wants another shot. He claims he's going to get to 444 because that's how many days he was out for his injury. What did he have? It was like a knee injury or something. Anyhow, he starts, but as soon as he gets to 52 reps, which does exceed the doubled number that the Iron Sheik would have to do, I think that might be important, but they might also gloss over that. The Iron Sheik attacks. He puts him in the camel clutch. Paul Ellering fights out of it, but Akbar has his back bar with the Persian flag and attacks. Is it the Persian flag? The Iran flag and attacks. attacks him from behind with that. So the feud continues, and we see more of that a little bit later on, at the most amount later on that you can possibly have in this episode, because it's at the end. Okay, so Paul Orndorff up next. Paul Orndorff defeats Brian Blair due to the ref calling for the risk of injury. Brian Blair does not give up, but he's got that reversed figure four on him. Brian Blair puts the figure four on Paul Orndorff, but Paul Orndorff reverses it. I feel like I have heard suplex pronounced like this before, but Cowboy Bill pronounces it souple. He says he souped Bob Roop, or not Bob Roop. He souped Paul Orndorff there. Bob Roop is at ringside. We learned that he is Paul Orndorff's shop teacher and mentor otherwise. What does that say? Looks on. I thought I said look, son. Nobody said that. At least not in this segment. Talking about the Iron Sheik, another great quote from Cowboy Bill Watts is he used that treachery to get out of a monetary loss. He didn't want to lose the $2,000 in that challenge. So he stopped Precious Paul's Persian Club's reps to get out of paying out. Up next, Ted DiBiase defeats big-haired Mike Boyd via a figure four. Mike Boyer via figure four leg lock. I get the feeling, other than the camel clutch from the Iron Sheik, the only submission move that anybody knows in this federation or organization or whatever you call Mid-South promotion, in this promotion is the figure four leg lock, and then the reversed figure four leg lock that you can only do after someone's applied the figure four leg lock to you. It's the only submission move I've seen so far, and it ends half of the matches, seems like. Anyhow, up next we had Bob Roop, the other shop teacher, tag teaming with Bob Orton Jr., defeat Mike Bond and Frank Monty via a pile driver. There's a couple of like head scissor takedowns from Monty. I thought that was pretty cool. And then we had Ed Wiskowski defeats Tommy Renesto Jr. via a side backbreaker type of thing. Some great advice from Cowboy Bill during this match. He says he's still talking about the previous one, with how the match ended, that they took advantage of the ref not paying attention and stuff. He said, if you need the ref to bail you out, you have no business in the ring. And I thought this kind of applied to other competitive sports, especially stuff that's not doesn't have like a quantitative thing to it. Well, even sports that do, you know, scoring points, I mean. If you're blaming the ref for things, I mean, that's part of the game. And if you blame the ref instead of, I mean, there are some obvious cases where it's absolutely something that can, like if the ref has a deciding, a very decisive thing, decision to, a very decisive decision to decide about. But as far as just like a regular win or loss, and then like if you lose by like 5 points and you say, it's all the ref's fault, blah, blah, blah. That's not productive. You got to look at, how could we have scored 5 or more points during that game? Where did our gameplay go wrong, and how can we improve and all that? So I took that, but also with drum corps, that if you're relying on just the judge's opinion, to make a great show, then that's also not of benefit to anybody except for the judges, maybe. But even then, that's not really a guarantee of like doing what you think the judges will like to just appease the judges instead of focusing on just making a great show for the sake of making a great show and whatnot. The next quote follows up on that. He says, if you blame the ref for losses, you also have to blame them for the wins too. And that goes for like drum corps and stuff anyway, like the years where the championship went to the wrong person. Well, it's the same, I mean, not the exact same judges who are also responsible for the wins that went to the quote unquote right group. So if you're you'll be upset about the judge's decision for a group's loss, then you should also be upset about the judge's decisions for that group's wins. So there you go. I think that's pretty good advice. Like it's how the game goes. It's best not to be upset about it either way. All right. Then our main event, Don Serrano versus the Iron Sheik, does not come to a decisive conclusion because Paul Ellering attacks the Sheik and Akbar pulls the Sheik out of there to escape. And like I said, there is a complete lack of Christmas references in this entire episode, despite airing on Christmas. So they probably recorded quite a bit earlier and didn't even think to mention Christmas on there. Cause I don't think they say any dates, what day it is or anything like that. All right. Let's get on to this week's shows, the new stuff. On Raw, we open up with Braun demanding more competition or else. So he goes throughout the episode, Braun destroys Golden Truth before they go out to have a match against who they even have a match? The Club. And then this wasn't in the Hulu version of the show, but the Club had some pretty good United Airlines jokes. Good on you, good brothers. And then later on, Braun drags Kalisto down the hall and tosses him into a dumpster. And the Big Show attacks. "Why don't you pick on someone your own size?" he says in Big Show's voice, not the voice I just did there. And this leads to both the main event, but also word is that in the next episode of Raw, we're going to see a Kalisto versus Braun Strowman dumpster match. I don't know what a dumpster match is. Is it the first person to throw the other person into a dumpster wins? It's like a coffin match, but with a much larger target. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to that. We'll see what happens. Let's see. Okay. Going back to the start, Samoa Joe defeats Chris Jericho with a Kikina clutch, and then Samoa Joe, "Seth Rollins, bring me my title, or bring me my title." I forget exactly what he said. He said something about Kingslayer, "All hail the Kingslayer," or something like sarcastic. He did it sarcastically. Miz TV with special guest Dean Ambrose. Dean attacks, and then Maurice throws a microphone at the back of his head. And then they run away. Alexa Bliss, we have a fatal four-way match for the number one contendership for the Raw Women's Championship at Payback. Alexa Bliss defeats Sasha Banks, Mickey James, and Nia Jax to get that opportunity. And I'm very excited. I presented the question. I asked the question last week and the week before that. No, last week was the shakeup. Who of the two would be the first to win both the Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships? Would it be Alexa Bliss or would it be Charlotte? And at this point in the week, I thought, oh, well, Alexa Bliss, she's got this. But then, there's another contendership match. Except it was just Charlotte versus Naomi. If Charlotte would be able to defeat Naomi, then she'd get a championship match next week on SmackDown. What is that? 5 days before Alexa Bliss has her championship match against Bayley. So Charlotte might get the jump on that honor. We'll see what happens next week. Anyway, I enjoyed this match. We had a phrase that maybe originated on, I read it first on Reddit, appropriately enough. But perhaps it's been used on air before, describing Nia Jax's $1 million smile on a wrecking ball. Corey Graves executed that description perfectly without it sounding, because there are definitely ways to say, to present that sentiment that don't sound as flattering. She's just this powerful, destructive force, but she's got a beautiful smile. Very, very descriptive. Alexa plays it smart in that match, and she won by stealing the pin from Nia. She drop kicks Nia to get her out of the ring after she hits a Samoan drop on Sasha. So that's how she's able to do that. This match, there's a couple of guys in the front row that are just complete jackasses. When Alexa Bliss is out of action, out of the ring, like on the floor, you can't even see her on camera. She's behind, she's like right up against the ring. But you see these guys with their cameras, and they're like putting their hands out and doing like the, they're not doing this, I'm pinching your head, I'm pinching your head from Kids in the Hall. They're, you know, I imagine they're doing it with, you know, whatever. It's obvious that they're being super creeps. So those front row jackasses, you just made the list for being front row jackasses. Oh, yeah. And then Sasha did the thing that I liked from, was it last week? But this time she sent someone, she had someone in the head scissors. Mickey James, and Alexa was tied up in the ropes, and she did the thing where she's like horizontal, her arms are on the corner, and then her legs are on the person's shoulders, and then she sends the person forward face first into the turnbuckle there. But instead of the turnbuckle, she sent Mickey James right into Alexa. So I thought that was the even better use of that move. And yeah, it's pretty cool. Up next, Curt Hawkins challenges Finn Balor, and Finn destroys him. As he should. I would have been very surprised otherwise, with this hot acquisition of Curt Hawkins. Who do we get over on SmackDown in return for Curt Hawkins? I don't even remember. Was that Jinder Mahal that got traded for Curt Hawkins? And as it turns out, that was a big trade up, as we'll talk about shortly. Chris Jericho adds the strange straggling strummer, the weird wandering wayfarer, the daffy drifting dandy to the list for interrupting him, putting other Tom on the list. Was it? No, he was putting somebody else on the list. I can't remember. What's important is that Elias Samson has made it. Probably not under that name. We had a pretty great match between Jeff Hardy and Cesaro. Jeff Hardy defeats Cesaro with that Swanton Bomb. But okay, here's the most important thing. I've buried the lead here. The most important thing about this whole episode, and hopefully, I'll remember to make this the title of the episode, so you'll be waiting for this moment, is that Cesaro wears Kinesio tape, or Rock tape, the brand name of the athletic tape that he uses to tape up his injured shoulder. His shoulder that is injured, the rotator cuff, I believe it was, he had surgery on it and everything, is his left shoulder, but tonight he was wearing that Rock tape full, like, to the full extent that he normally does on his right shoulder. The image wasn't reversed or anything like that, because everybody's, the t-shirts on the people in the crowd were red forwards, the apron, the displays and everything red forwards. It was not some video trick. He had the Rock tape on his right shoulder. So what's going on? I tweeted Cesaro to find out what's happening with that. No response. There's a couple of people who also noticed this. I haven't seen any explanation presented by anyone. I have no explanation. Maybe it's Bizarro Cesaro. We have Bizarro Cesaro on our hands. He's come from a left-right mirror universe or rather a front back mirror universe where his heart is on the right side and his injured shoulder is also on the right side. And is he now left-handed where he was right-handed before? Anybody who's gotten an autograph from Cesaro, let me know. Well, I don't know what handiness he has been before, handedness he was before, but if anybody has gotten his autograph before and now, is that opposite? Does he wear his watch on the opposite hand? All that kind of thing. I think we may have a Bizarro Cesaro in our midst. He's an imposter, and it might be bad news for all of us. That said, it was after the match. He gave Jeff Hardy a big hug, and it was a pretty nice moment. These guys are going to go head-to-head at Payback for the championship, but they're very friendly towards each other, very nice, and that's great to see. You don't see that a lot. The last time I can remember that kind of thing was Cruiserweight Classic, Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano after their match. They had a great display of camaraderie there. All right. Bizarro Cesaro is in our midst. And then our main event, Braun Strowman versus The Big Show. Since it was a last-minute thing, they didn't know this match was going to happen. They did know it was going to happen, obviously. But story-wise, it's not like the last time they met, where they had reinforced the ring. And I'm glad that Corey actually mentions it at the end here. He's like, oh, this is what happens when we don't reinforce the ring. This is why we should have done that. It's just the regular ring setup, and that leads to... It's not the regular ring setup, it's made to do what happened. Braun Strowman shows a massive amount of strength. He kicks out of the choke slam. He kicks out of the knockout punch, and it's teased throughout the match. But finally, Braun Strowman gets the Big Show into a superplex. He superplexes him in the middle of the ring. The ring collapses. It's fantastic, and this whole Braun Strowman storyline is so, so good. And I hope that it's not like some other storylines that have been amazing where the ending is awful, but it's possible. It is very possible because it's Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns at Payback. I could see... I hope Braun Strowman wins. It would make sense because we have... Roman Reigns still coming off of the shoulder separation injury after being tipped over in an ambulance and everything. So it would be ridiculous if Roman Reigns won at Payback. It would be ridiculous. He's already won against Braun Strowman when he's at 100%. You know, it's even the most powerful guy, when he's injured, it makes sense for them to not be on the top of their game. Have Braun Strowman win, please. Well, we'll talk about predictions in next week's episode. All right. That brings us to SmackDown. Charlotte's fastly getting furious that she hasn't gotten a title match yet. And Shane comes out and says, oh, yeah, okay. So two matches later, Charlotte defeats Naomi via the natural selection to get a championship match next week. I put a tweet out to Charlotte to ask her what the head scissor leg lock. No, what is it? Yeah. The head scissor leg lock, into like these leg suplexes that she does. It's so cool. I have no idea. That's like the best way I can think of to describe it. Cause it's like Suplex City or like multiple German suplexes, but it's with her legs down on the mat. It's so cool. No idea what it's called. So I'm calling it leg suplexes. If I get corrected later on, if you know what that's called, if you have a better name for it, let me know also. It had the initial part of that, with the then slamming their head into the mat while doing that move. but nothing about the suplex type maneuver on her moveset list on Wikipedia. Anyway, it was a pretty good match. And like I said, since the championship match happens on SmackDown next week, the next episode of SmackDown, Charlotte has the chance to be the first to have won both SmackDown and Raw Women's Championships, getting the jump on Alexa Bliss's championship match by 5 days. So we'll see what happens. It kind of is a bummer that now Talking Smack is getting the jump on Raw, but it's with the same person that always got the jump on those types of firsts over on Raw, Charlotte, of course. But anyway, it's still going to be an exciting match, and I'm looking forward to it. Before that, we had a six-pack challenge for the number one contendership for the WWE Championship that was won by Jinder Mahal. He got a leg up on Sami's leg up. The Helluva kick gets avoided as the Bollywood boys crawl out of the woodwork from they crawl out from under the cage, the ring. Oh my gosh. Hold on to Sami's feet as he's about to go for the Helluva kick. He's not able to hit it, and Jinder Mahal takes advantage and gets the win. So at Backlash, we're going to have Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. Pretty strange. Really strange. Jinder was on Talking Smack again. He's saying, I am the new American Dream. I'm the new American Dream. And then Shane responds by saying, you know what? I like these chairs. They make us look the same height. Yeah, great interaction there. But seriously, Talking Smack is so good. So good. Whether it's Renee and Shane or Renee and Daniel Bryan, if we could get another episode with Renee and AJ Styles, that would be fantastic. It was only like the very end of that one episode where it was just the two of them. But I want to see that again. Okay, then we had Primo and Epico Colon, no longer the Shining Stars, defeats American Alpha via roll-up after a very goofy shin to the face behind the ref's back. It was like, I don't know, there's something about it lacked any impact, that shin to the face, and it is, I don't know, it was a little bit stilted. Anyhow, Primo and Epico on the scene. Are they benefiting from this heel turn as the Usos had done so before and are now currently in that state? I think so. I guess we'll see. Next up, Kevin Owens destroys Gary Dandy with a powerbomb. Gary Dandy from, were they in Tennessee? Forget. He's from wherever they're from. And then we have the main event, AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin. AJ Styles defeats Baron Corbin via countout after a kerfuffle outside of the ring. He sends Baron Corbin over the barricade. Instead of continuing the fight, they would have gotten a double countout if he had done that. Anyway, he gets back to the ring just in time and gets the win via that countout. Some excellent, excellent, excellent sequences throughout this match. But story-wise, it didn't have as much impact for me as my other top matches this week. Okay, onward to... I didn't talk about main events since it's tied mostly with Raw. Real quick, Titus O'Neil defeats Curtis Axel with the Clash of the Titus. There's a bit of a miscommunication with Tom thinking that Corey called Titus. He's saying the Titus brand was a thing to look out for or something. And then Tom says, and that thing being Titus O'Neil. Like, no, I wasn't calling Titus a thing. I was saying the brand was a... frustration. But yeah, it was a pretty funny interaction. And then we had at the 27-minute mark, if you're watching on Hulu, Arya Daivari and Tony Nese defeat Gran Metalik and Lince Dorado with Daivari's Hammerlock Clothesline, which was pretty solid. on Lince Dorado. And then also earlier in the match, obviously earlier in the match, they wouldn't have done this after the match, but you never know. Sometimes they do cool stuff after the match has been decided. We got a double moonsault to outside the ring by Gran Metalik and Lince Dorado. So that was pretty cool. All right, over to, speaking of 205 Live, folks, the Cruiserweights. Akira Tozawa defeats Tony Nese via roll-up thanks to the Brian Kendrick's accidental distraction. As Brian Kendrick apologizes to Tony Nese, he then goes over to Akira, and Tony Nese attacks him from behind. Lesson number three, Akira reminds him. Eyes on the back of your head. Also, we've learned this week that we'll have no more Tajiri on 205 Live. Such a bummer. We only got one match with him. Only two segments with the Brian Kendrick. Ah, so disappointing. No more Green Mist. Dang. Dang. But at least we got what we did get with him. It was short and sweet. Very memorable for me. I do like that this whole... We have these 10 lessons that have been laid out by the Brian Kendrick over the course of 10 weeks, basically. And now we're getting another 10 weeks, one lesson at a time, that's being laid out in the opposite direction. And it's going to be fantastic when this concludes with the Brian Kendrick in an epic match against Akira Tozawa. It'll probably be on a kickoff show or something. And they just go back and forth utilizing all 10 of these lessons. I hope that's where all this is going. So we'll see. And hopefully neither of them gets injured so that this can actually keep playing out. All right. Alicia Fox and Noam Dar break up because Alicia Fox wants to get with the guy who's been giving her all these great presents, Rich Swann. But Rich Swann says, you're not kissing me because I only did this to get revenge for my best friend. He doesn't say best friends. His very close friend, Cedric Alexander, because you broke his heart. And he just walks away. And Alicia Fox is enraged. She goes, a single's better anyway. You don't have to do whatever. pretty good conclusion to that. Now I get to see Noam Dar do some other stuff. Let's see him go up against TJ Perkins. He should be... No, did he already try to do that? Yeah, he tried to be... I don't even remember. But if we had Neville and his assistant, TJ Perkins, up against Austin Aries and his new assistant, Noam Dar, I think that could be pretty solid. I think that would be pretty solid matchups there. Some tag team matches with those four going at it. Stylin Arya Daivari defeats Mustafa Ali after no-fly zone Drew Gulak arrives and distracts them with his ain't no lying, no more flying, or whatever his chant was. This political Drew Gulak is silly. I like it. And then our main event, Austin Aries defeats TJ Perkins via a countered detonation kick. He counters it into the ear clap and then the discus five arm gets him the win. Neville comes out. Austin Aries hits him with the last chancery, but TJ Perkins stomps him in the belly. They team up on him, gets hit with a detonation kick, and then the rings of Saturn. I'm looking forward to that match so much. By the way, doesn't look like I am actually going to be able to go to Payback in person. That still might... I might be able to. I have the plane ticket, but staying in town to do other stuff might be more important. We'll find out. We'll see. If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. But it would be amazing. I think that's the match I'd be most excited to see is Austin Aries versus Neville. It'll be a fantastic match. It's going to be a fantastic match. And really hope it's not on the kickoff show. Put something else on the kickoff show. It's a Raw show episode. It's a Raw pay-per-view. do one of your non-title matches on the kickoff. Please. Please. I don't know if it's even been announced what's all the matches for it, because we still have one more episode before. Okay, and then NXT 388. Bobby Roode comes out and claims to have filled the stadium at TakeOver Orlando, and Hideo Itami arrives, gives him a slap, and gives him a go to sleep. So we got this fantastic feud set in place. It's going to happen at the next TakeOver for sure, right? Bobby Roode versus Hideo Itami. Hideo Itami has got to win that championship. I'm excited. I am super excited. Also, next week, the UK Championship is on the line between Tyler Bates, the current champion, the inaugural champion, the only ever WWE UK champion, Tyler Bates, versus Gentleman Jack Gallagher. Oh, that's gonna be fantastic. The mustaches against each other. The British mustache match. A British mustache match. There are many possible British mustache matches. Oh, that's mustache matches is hard to say. All right, Andrade Cien Almas defeats Danny Burch. Danny Burch looks straight up out of like a Guy Ritchie film or Danny Boyle film, like a footballer from one of those London films, via Hammerlock DDT. That was pretty awesome. Aaliyah and Liv Morgan defeat Peyton Royce and Billie Kay when Aaliyah rolls up Peyton Royce after a dropkick to Billie Kay. Ty Dillinger, okay, the main event, Ty Dillinger defeats Eric Young by escaping the cage. He fights off the members of Sanity who come out and try to lock him in there. He's about to make an escape, but right there, Killian Dane and Alexander Wolf close the cage. No, you're not getting out. And they lock it back up. He fights them off. They try to climb to get inside the cage, join him in there. But the Riott family has his back. Ruby Riott isn't there, but Cassius Ohno and Roderick Strong help fight off Sanity. They give Ty just the advantage he needs to even the score. It's not an advantage. It's just neutralizing this unfair advantage that Sanity has presented. He gets out of there. But before that, we have a huge crossbody block off of the top of the cage by Ty. He hits Alexander Wolf and Eric Young with that move. Earlier in the match, Eric Young has been busted open. He's bleeding from his face or above his face, you know, his head area. So he's bleeding. There's blood all over him. And he hits this huge elbow off the top of the cage, and the blood just splatters everywhere. It's crazy. And it added even more to the impact of that move. So awesome. Such an awesome match. Why didn't I put that as my number one match? I should have put it as my number one match. Tiebreaker upgrade. Number one match of the week. Ty Dillinger versus Eric Young. What else happened there? That's pretty much it for that match. It's great. The rest of this episode of NXT was like, all right. It's back to, it wasn't as great as last week, but then this match, ooh, phenomenal. Or rather, a perfect 10. A perfect 10 ending for Ty Dillinger. All right, and I'm looking forward to see what happens next. He's undefeated so far on SmackDown. It's like the exact opposite of all of his matches on NXT in the past year. So I look forward to see where things go for him. Is he going to go? He's got to go after the U.S. title. A Canadian versus Canadian. Ty is Canadian, right? Yeah, he's from Ontario. Okay, so that's it. Let me know what you thought about this week's episodes by tweeting me at TIW Podcast. Go to todayiwatched.com for more reviews. If you enjoyed this episode or anything else on the site, please share some links with your friends. Subscribe on iTunes, write a review on iTunes, and support the show even more at patreon.com/todayiwatched. What do you think will happen next week? What do you think is going to happen at Payback and beyond? Let me know, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.